bite my tongue. It's a bad habit. Kind of mad that I didn't take a stab at it. That's Steve Lacy. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. That might be how Ernie Clement would have felt yesterday. He said after the game, I probably shouldn't be swinging at pitches like that. But Ernie Clement hit it out. And that home run, which was the story of last night's game, because, first of all, the Blue Jays won 5-3, and Ernie Clement hit a home run that ended up being very important to that victory. But also, comical in terms of where the pitch was, the context of, just how high the pitch was and things like that. So I pulled some data. We have pitch height data going back to 2015. That covers 52,620 home runs. There was one home run among all of those that was hit on a higher pitch than Ernie Clement last night. And that was Kyle Higashioka hitting one out against a position player pitching, and the pitch was 35 miles an hour. So if we accept that, hey, teeing off on a 35 mile an hour pitch from a non-pitcher probably shouldn't get the same treatment, Ernie Clement's was the highest pitch hit for a home run that we have data for going back to 2015. Ridiculous. Ernie Clement, by the way, is 6 feet tall. Not 6 foot six, not Aaron Judge reaching out and swinging at something like that. Ernie Clement is an average sized person, and he hit the highest home run. The reactions from John Schneider, from Matt Hagg, from the entire dugout was really, really fun. So I didn't see the game live last night. I was at Budweiser stage. I'm on a very heavy string of concerts right now, which has been a lot of fun. They've all lined up with Jay's off nights or Jay's afternoon games. But last night I saw The Beaches, who put on a tremendous show. And Dizzy, shout out to Dizzy. They're from Oshawa. They opened, and they are always awesome. And I see them every time I get a chance. So I saw the screenshot of Ernie Clement's home run. And then when I got home at like 11:30 and turned the game on to watch it on PVR, the amount of times I just like paused and looked at the dugout's reaction. And then as our broadcast was showing replays and stuff like that, going back and like looking at a different person each time to see the reaction to it was a lot of fun. Man, Ernie Clement hits an absolute rocket on, again, the highest pitch hit for a home run that we have data on that wasn't thrown by a position player at 35 miles an hour. So effectively the highest pitch anyone has hit out. Also in that game, Jays won 5-3, by the way. So they continue to beat up on a pretty hapless Angels team here. In addition to Ernie Clement's homer, Alejandro Kirk and Joey Loperfido stayed hot. They each had two hits. And then the big story on the pitching side was Ryan Yarbrough gave them five clean innings as a follower. So Ryan Burke got the start. Yarbrough went five. Brandon Little had a clean stint as well. Tommy Nance made it a little scary in the ninth inning. But the Jays get out of there with a 5-3 win. If you are looking at, hey, is there going to be another bullpen day anytime soon? The person who would probably have the most say about that is Jake Bloss. He threw three innings at AAA again last night. Third outing in a row for the Bisons where he didn't allow a run. He did allow three walks and two hits in this one, so he only got three innings, even though they were letting him throw to 65 pitches. He'd thrown 50 and 56 in his two previous starts. But notable that the Jays next need an extra pitcher Monday when they can call up a 27th player for the doubleheader day. But, Jake Bloss technically wouldn't be on turn for that one, nor would Paolo Espino, though I don't think they would really care that much if Paolo Espino throws a couple innings today and then throws a couple on Monday. So we'll see how they handle that. Jake Bloss continuing to look good, continuing to look like maybe he's ready for a little taste of the majors here. We'll see. The Jays are going to, like they did here, push guys back. They've got five off days over 29 competitive days in September, so lots of room to get guys an extra breather and things like that. And then obviously rosters expand so you can get an extra pitcher up. We had a fun show today. Josh Kasevich of the Buffalo Bisons is going to join us. He is on a heater himself. He's hitting .354 of the last 2 weeks. Actually, a really interesting Ernie Clement comp is Kasevich because of the super high contact. You're not going to walk, but you're also not going to strike out. There's maybe not a ton of home run power until the last 3 days for Ernie Clement. So interesting comp there. Excited to ask him if he's looked at Ernie Clement as an example or any other hitters as an example. Ben Schulman will be on with us. Matt Vasgersian will be on with us. Obviously, we are an MVP Baseball 05 show here, but the early games of the show when I was still playing video games were also great, and Matt Vasgersian was awesome on those. He's also the Angels play-by-play guy. So we'll talk to him. But right now, we are joined by Everyone's favorite voice, of course, Jonah Bierenbaum of The Score. Jonah, what's up, man? How are we doing?
Doing great, buddy. How are you?
Good. Oh, man, the mustache is getting a little thick there.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll take that as a compliment.
It wasn't your producer a compliment,
also,
no.
your producer also reached out to acknowledge it at the very least. So, you know, I think I'm doing something right mustache-wise.
Yeah, it's a good look. You're a handsome man. I saw you at the ballpark the other day. It was an okay series against the Reds. There was some fun stuff, Ellie De La Cruz, things like that. And then, you know, we're looking at what are we going to see the rest of the way here? So the Joey Votto thing is off the table now. We'll talk about Joey Votto in a minute here. You know, none of the AAA September call-ups are, you know, all that. Like, Jake Bloss would be cool. Jonathan Clase, who I think people want to see, is really struggling at AAA. So we'll see how that shakes out. But baseball is a fun sport in that it will sometimes give you things that you weren't expecting and you didn't think, hey, I might see this or I'll never see this. You just didn't think of it at all. And Ernie Clement hits like a climb the ladder pitch, man, out of the ballpark last night. Man, your reaction to that, how you've hit a dinger or two in your time. How do you reach out there and get that one?
That's a very generous gesture on your part. Unfortunately, I have never hit a home run at any level of baseball.
Really?
I've long maintained that as soon as I hit my first one, I'm rounding the bases and I'm running straight to the parking lot. I'm done. I'm throwing in the towel. But what I will say about Ernie Clement is that, I mean, that's the kind of pitch that if you don't hit out of the ballpark, you get absolutely excoriated for swinging at. But, you know, it's only fitting that the most unconventional hitter, possibly in all of baseball, hits the most unconventional home run we've seen in the StatCast era. Yeah, that was just absolutely silly. I feel like the reactions from the dugout were on par with the reactions to the Kawhi shot from the Raptors championship run, because it was just you're never going to see anything like that again. 4.6 feet off the ground. But yeah, I mean, in what's been a pretty dispiriting season for the Blue Jays, Ernie Clement's really been a heartening story, like a real testament to his stick-to-itiveness that he's been able at the age of 28, after many, many years grinding out in the minor leagues and with a highly unconventional profile, you know, becoming effectively an everyday big leaguer, you know, not necessarily for the remainder of his career, but at least for 2024, he was essentially an everyday big leaguer. And he's done a really nice job for this Blue Jays team. You know, thanks to this recent heater, he's been an above average hitter overall on the season with a 104 WRC plus. You know, he's top five among Blue Jays position players in wins above replacement. He's going to finish the season in all likelihood top five on the team in plate appearances. He's graded out positively at shortstop, at third base. He's just generally done a really nice job, and he's a really easy guy to root for given his story. And it's really cool to see a guy get an opportunity and deliver, because that's really what he's done. And I think, you know, given how well he's performed this season overall, he's really positioned himself to be a utility player for the next Blue Jays team, the 2025 Blue Jays team that's going to hope to be competitive. I don't think that, you know, moving forward, they should be earmarking him for every day at bats. But certainly the way he's played this year, the way he's acquitted himself so well across multiple defensive positions, he should definitely be in consideration to be a utility player for what's hopefully a competitive Blue Jays team in 2025.
It better be, man. Look, you're right. The story is cool. In addition, like, everyone who has gotten to know Ernie Clement through the broadcast or if you're at the park or whatever, again, like you said, very easy guy to root for. Came on the show last year when he was with Buffalo, and just like tons of positivity, you know, good teammates, stuff like that. Like, yeah, just an all around good guy, and then can have some fun with it, right? Like, even like he said after the game, like last night, I probably shouldn't be swinging at that. And you can see like the broadcast picked up. He watches it back on the iPad with Spencer Horwitz, and the look on his face, like, I think, you know, having a guy like that who can bring some levity is important, but also it's a good reminder. There's a look at, for those of you watching on TV, there's a look on his face. There's also,
he knows he did something wrong, man. That's an impish smile right there.
Yeah. It's a no. Yes. Is what that one is. But yeah, this is a guy who he got waived late in the 2022 season. Even the Oakland A's going into last year were like, nah, you know what? We'll just release him. And the Jays scooped him up. And like, even at that time, like, I don't think any of us rated him. He hadn't been a league average hitter at any minor league level. So for him to be able to do this and turn himself into this monster contact profile, who, yeah, is now getting to show a little bit. And I'm sure the path that he took, getting dropped a couple times, informs some of the levity that he plays with and the fact that he's able to have fun with it and kind of laugh at himself like that. But those are important to have when things are competitive, because things can get really, really tense when every game matters that much. And they're really important to have right now when, you need guys to keep hands on the rope, because there's still 40 games left or so to play here. So you mentioned it in terms of 2025, you probably can't go into it with Ernie Clement penciled in. Look, even with this heater, he's up to a 104 WRC plus. So he's been slightly better than league average at the plate, and with plus defense, that would be great. He was, in a small sample, very good at the plate last year, too. Projecting him forward-wise, you probably hope he can be an average bat who can move around defensively. Yeah. Look, if they go out and they get Anthony Santander and Juan Soto, you can play Ernie Clement every day at third base, right? Like, if that's your outfield solution and your DH solution, you could play Jonah Birenbaum at third base every day if you really want. That's probably not what's going to happen. So in your eyes, when you're slotting in what 2025 looks like, that's like a premium bench piece then, rather than a guy who's going to get a look every single day. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if you're trying to get back to, 90 wins, which in 2024 is the barrier to postseason entry in the American League, you want him coming off the bench and being a guy you can slot in, when you want to give your everyday guys a breather in case someone goes down in the event of injury. But, projecting him to be an everyday player, I don't think is shooting high enough, just given, how big the gulf is from where they are to where they want to be. And moreover, there's a number of pretty attractive free agent third basemen out there on the market. Alex Bregman's going to be available. Matt Chapman, who's had a really fine season in San Francisco, he's going to be on the market once again. So, there are options out there. And I think Clement has demonstrated, sufficient versatility to be plugged in pretty much anywhere in the infield. And look, I think if they invest in a third baseman and they leave second base a little more open for internal competition between Spencer Horowitz, Will Wagner, and neither of those guys pan out, well, then you have Ernie Clement to fall back on. So yeah, I think keeping him, as a bit of a floater and a utility guy is really the best use of his talents.
You mentioned Will Wagner there. What are your initial impressions here? Obviously, he has the banger first couple games there. He's cooled off a little bit, but still a hit in every start that he's made here for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, really impressive. Really impressed with the quality of his plate appearances. And even last night, where, he only collected one hit, he still had the hardest hit ball of the ball game at almost 105 miles an hour off the bat. So far, 11.3% of the pitches he's seen in the big leagues have turned into 95 plus mile an hour exit velocity. So he is really doing a great job of turning in competitive at bats, delivering hard contact. Even in the ball game on Monday night when I was there and we met up before the game, he only had one hit, I believe, in that ball game. But even his outs, they were so loud, and with the exception of his late game at bat against, a really hard throwing left-hander, he's really making pitchers work out there. And look, that's consistent with who he is and who he's been throughout his professional career. In AA and AAA, he's always been a guy who's hit at a very high level. And, when Toronto acquired him from Houston, the evaluators were pretty bullish about this guy's ability to hit. The question about Will Wagner is, where is he going to end up ultimately defensively? But, if you're hitting at the kind of level that Will Wagner has, so far in his extremely brief big league career, it's ultimately immaterial, right? You can play that guy anywhere because he's just hitting at such a high level. So it's been an incredibly encouraging start. And I really think that he's forced his way into the conversation for that second base job for 2025.
This is nitpicky given the part of the season that we're in here, where obviously we don't care all that much about the wins and losses. We just want good individual play and things like that. But in the game he didn't start against Cincinnati, so that would have been Wednesday night, there were two instances where Davis Schneider came up in high leverage against the righty. Are we at a point with Davis Schneider and conversely with Will Wagner where they should probably be pinch hitting there, even if it is as early as the fifth inning?
Look, if they were in the middle of a pennant race, yes. But I think that the Blue Jays are also evaluating David Schneider, right? This is a guy who came into the season poised to play a pretty meaningful role for a team that was expected to be competitive. And obviously the Blue Jays season hasn't gone as expected, nor has David Schneider's. He has really, really struggled this year. And the last 2 months in particular have been pretty abysmal. I think the Blue Jays are really trying to figure out what they have in David Schneider and what kind of role he's going to play for this team in 2025. At the current rate, it looks like he's going to be, you know, a secondary depth option for outfield and potentially infield depth.
And maybe a triple A.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's not even going to be the first guy called up, you know, in the event of injury, because he has really, really fallen off offensively. And I think it's important to remind everyone as well is that, you know, when they called David Schneider up last year and he had that incredible heater, there wasn't a ton of pedigree there, right? At no point was he one of the top prospects in all of baseball. He just kind of exploded a little bit, you know, in Buffalo last season. I managed to parlay that into some, you know, really remarkable early success at the big league level. But, you know, it really seems like the book is out on David Schneider. Pitchers have a really good idea of how to attack him. That's with a lot of velocity up. And so far, he hasn't been able to adjust back. And, you know, given how the Blue Jays have really bolstered their outfield and infield depth in the recent months, it really feels like David Schneider has been usurped on the organizational depth chart. And I think the reason he's getting, you know, these at-bats, you know, late in games where it might make more sense to pinch hit with, you know, someone like Will Wagner is because the Blue Jays, I think, are in the late stages of taking a good hard look at Davis Schneider and what he can ultimately contribute to this team in 2025.
Okay. You want to have some nonsense fun with late season heaters?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So they're, look, this is possibly the start of an Ernie Clement heater. We'll see. Right now, I set the cutoff intentionally at game 125 onward. So the last, you know, the playing out the string, I didn't just look at September. I did 125 onward. And that happens. The last three games have been 125, 126, 127. So right now from game 125 onward, the end game of the season, Ernie Clement has the best OPS in team history. Obviously it's 1.9, right now, the top five. And I didn't put in playing time qualifiers, so there's no way you'll guess these because it's guys who didn't play very much. But other names in the top five are Roger Clemens, who went 1-for-2 with a double and a walk in one game, and Joe Inglet, who went 3-for-5 in a little cameo there. But we're now going to turn it to guys who actually played. Real stuff. And there's some fun.
I've loved me some Joe Inglet, for the record. I was a big Joe Inglet stan back in the day.
Yes. So, yeah, right now, hey, the fifth best OPS in team history from game 125
on. 125 on.
Okay, so that's the window we're looking at. So just think like closing stretch of the season. Who had the most home runs among a Blue Jay in that final stretch of season ever? There are three guys tied for first across kind of three different eras of the team. So you can go a couple different ways with this one and maybe find your way to it.
It's got to be Jose Bautista.
It is not. He has...
Oh, man.
He hit 14 bombs in 2010 toward the end of the year, but there are three guys who had 15.
Wow. Man, 15 bombs in the
last one is very Jose Bautista connected.
Edwin Encarnacion.
He had 15 in 2015. He ended the season on just an absolute... 15 homers and 37 RBI and a 1.15 OPS over his last 34 games that year.
Of course he did. Man, the unsung hero. God.
Way to head into the playoffs hot, Eddie.
Yeah.
Okay, there's two others.
Two others, 15 bombs. And are they roughly that same time period?
One is more recent. One is further back, but like he's going to pop up on 500 of these questions because he's one of the greatest Jays hitters of all time.
Carlos Delgado.
Yeah. He did it in 1998. His 2002 close and 2004 close are also right up here. He had 12 in each of those. Just Carlos Delgado could end a season.
Well, and when he had his four homer game against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, which I was at, by the way, that was in September. I don't know if it was from the game 125 onwards. It might have been. It must have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like late season.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So one more. It's more recent. He's no longer on the Blue Jays, but it was fairly recent.
No longer on the Blue Jays. Guy with pop.
Had a 40-plus homer season.
40-plus homers?
Yeah.
Josh Donaldson.
Marcus Semien. Yeah.
Of course. Here for a good time, not for a long time.
45 that year when the Jays led the league in home runs, which, man, that's a fun thing to do. They should go back to doing that.
Unimaginable given the current iteration of the team. He had 45, Vlad hit 48, and we'll never speak of that season again.
No, we certainly will not. Okay, I mentioned Jose Bautista had 14 in that stretch. There is one other Blue Jay who had 14 who we haven't mentioned yet. And there is another Jose Bautista connection, but maybe not the connection you will think of.
Another Jose Bautista connection.
Another Jose connection.
Jose Cruz Jr.?
Jose Canseco. Went haywire at the end of that 1998 season. Him and Delgado combined for 29 home runs over the last 40 games of that season for the Jays.
That's unbelievable. And Canseco, like Semien, was a Blue Jay for 1 year and hit 40-plus bombs and was never seen again. And
went
we remember them
home
fondly.
Country.
Yeah, exactly. His home planet.
That year, the Jays were only a game over 500 at the start of this stretch, and they finished the season 88-74.
Unbelievable.
They just okay, so I want to pivot to 2002 now, because that is similar to 1998, a season where the team wasn't very good. They finished 78-84, but they closed the season 25-11 run.
Wow.
I mentioned Delgado. One of Delgado's big closes was that season. There is another Blue Jay from that team. A lot of guys had good years. Vernon had a good close that season. Shannon Stewart, Eric Kinski. But there was another guy that we thought was going to be a piece of that young core who also hit 10 home runs down the stretch.
In 2002?
Yes.
Orlando Hudson.
Nope. He came up midway through the season and just like went off, and we were all like, yep, this is a part of the future. A catcher
Aaron Hill.
DH.
No. Josh Phelps.
There you go. Yeah. He hit 15 home runs that partial rookie season, 74 games, and 10 of them were like down the stretch. Then followed it up with 20 the next year and then disappeared forever.
He found the fifth deck, if I'm not mistaken, at Rogers Center. And everyone was raving about Josh Phelps, that big time power, but unfortunately, didn't sustain it.
Yeah, he had a 1.119 OPS over the final 32 games of the season that year. Like again, as a rookie called up midway through the season, just ridiculous close. Here's a question for you. This is not a trivia question, but maybe you can help me out. So that's obviously like, that is the Blue Jays equivalent of a Shane Spencer 1998, if you remember when he came up for the Yankees.
Yeah,
just went, hey,
the Yankees.
Why did I have it in my head that Gabe Gross did something like that too? He absolutely did not.
No, he was a spring training demon. He went off in the Grapefruit League one season, hit like 8 bombs, and everyone was like, Gabe Gross is the next Blue Jay superstar. And I think he was swiftly gone from the organization. I think he resurfaced in Milwaukee. But yeah, whenever anyone has a spring training heater, they invariably draw comparisons to Gabe Gross because he went off one spring.
So in my head, that happened in season. But that's a thank you for explaining that to me. Okay, last one on random heaters to end the season. In 1987... so Josh Phelps is the biggest pull because he only hit 15 home runs that year and 10 of them are down the stretch. This catcher only hit 19 that year and 10 of them were down the stretch. 1987 catcher on the Blue Jays.
It's not Borders.
No.
Ernie Witt.
There you go. Ernie Witt. It wasn't even the one All-Star season he had because he just like, it was just a big close to the season.
Right.
For him. Okay, here's one last one for you.
Love it.
Of the guys on the current Toronto Blue Jays or on the AAA Buffalo Bisons, who is the likeliest to go on one of these heaters the rest of the way here, with the caveat that they then, like, they don't disappear. They might stick around, but, like, they don't, like, who is the likeliest to just go on a heater that in retrospect looks like a Josh Phelps heater?
Right. Great question. Maybe let's go with Joey Loperfido.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's pedigree there. There's power in that swing. The contact issues that plagued him in Houston have very much carried over to Toronto. You know, there's uh, There's definitely a number of holes in his swing right now. He really struggles against premium velocity. He against pitches 97 plus miles an hour. His expected weighted on base is 104. I don't think it's a coincidence that his only home run in a Blue Jays uniform came off a heater that was 90 miles an hour from Shoto Imanaga. And then the other problem is that he also struggles against spinning stuff. He has one of the highest swinging strike rates against breaking balls this year at almost 48%. And ultimately, what you're looking at is that kind of paints a picture of a guy who's currently overmatched at the big league level. But having said that, you know, the quality of competition dumbs down a little bit in September, not as much as it used to, mind you.
Play the Angels a bunch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's, why don't they make the whole plane out of Angels games? So, you know, the quality of competition dumbs down a little bit. You know, I could see Joey getting into a few down the stretch here and maybe inflating expectations higher than they ought to be. Overall, he hasn't been terribly impressive since coming over. Even his triple last night, it had an expected batting average of less than 100 that should have been caught by Joe Adell. But look, down the stretch, anything can happen, as, you know, you have just very clearly pointed out with late season surges from guys that were never heard from again. So who knows? Maybe this could be the September of Joey.
Joe Adell, an interesting comp for Loperfido, just in terms of a guy who's tools out like crazy. And there's, you know, I mean, Joe Adell's hitting better lately, but a guy who's taken some time to turn those. Okay, let's go from Joey and Joe to a different Joey. Joey Votto announced his retirement the other day. We did a lot on it on the show yesterday. For you, is there a favorite Votto stat, fact, memory, etc.?
Okay, my favorite Joey Votto memory has nothing to do with what he did on a baseball field, because a few winters ago, I was walking down Dundas Street in Toronto, right? The streets are covered with snow. It's minus 20 out. And who do I see walking towards me? Joey Votto, walking his dog, a chocolate lab, and carrying what appeared to be an air conditioner. And I'm like, what other big leaguer would you ever encounter in a scenario like this? Like, you would figure a Toronto-born big leaguer would probably try to avoid the Canadian winters and go away to Florida, go away to Arizona. But there's Joey Votto out in the cold of January in Toronto, walking his dog, carrying an air conditioner, and stopping to chat with, you know, an annoying fan like me.
Man, and carrying an air conditioner. Did Clint Barnes teach us nothing? Don't carry heavy stuff on precarious ground by yourself. Get someone to help you out with that venison, with that AC unit. Unbelievable.
No, exactly. No, but man, seriously, I love me some Joey Votto. I don't know, you know, a baseball fan of our vintage who doesn't. I mean, look, the numbers speak for themselves. You know, a career 920 OPS, 144 OPS plus, almost an identical Jaws score as Miguel Cabrera. Like, he's a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame. That goes without question. But I also think, you know, he was such an archetype. He's really the exemplar of the modern-day hitter. He had, you know, a contemporary GM's appreciation for OBP, and he combined his incredible command of the strike zone and plate discipline with the ability to do damage. Now, he never won a batting title. He led his league in OBP seven times. Dude, the only guy to do that, the only players, I should say, to do that more times, Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, like, we're talking about the elite of the elite, Rogers Hornsby, Barry Bonds. And along the way, Votto still hit 356 homers. That's a lot of homers. And you put all of that together, he's in rarefied air, man. So the only players in baseball history with more home runs and a higher OBP than Votto: Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, Barry Bonds, Mickey Mantle, Lou Gehrig, Jimmy Fox, Frank Thomas, Mel Ott, Manny Ramirez, Stan Musial, Mike Trout, and Todd Helton. So that's 9 Hall of Famers. 2 guys who would be Hall of Famers on merit if they weren't linked to steroids, and 1 guy in Mike Trout who's not yet eligible. So, you know, I really think that paints the picture of just how good Joey Votto was, even though he didn't hit those thresholds, those milestones of 500 home runs or 3,000 base hits. And I think it also needs to be noted, man, Joey Votto was a progressive figure, not just in terms of his approach to hitting, but really, I think, as an athlete and a person, right? In 2009, when Votto spoke candidly about his struggles with depression and anxiety following the death of his father, it wasn't yet commonplace for pro athletes to discuss mental health issues. So I think the normalization and destigmatization of these things, both among pro athletes and by pro athletes, it can be traced back in part to Joey Votto. He really was influential in so many ways. He really was just one of a kind, man. I called him on Twitter a delightful weirdo, and I mean that in the most complimentary sense. He's a legend, a Canadian baseball legend, a Cincinnati Reds legend, and I think it's really I think, quite special that he's going to go into the Hall of Fame as a player who only played for one team in his big league career, because among contemporary big leaguers, that's exceedingly rare. So I'm going to miss Joey Votto. It obviously would have been amazing to see him in a Blue Jays uniform. It wasn't meant to be, and I applaud him for showing the kind of self-awareness that he did, and really that he did throughout his entire career, to recognize that he's no longer a big leaguer, and to pack it in when he did. Yeah, I'm going to miss Joey Votto, man.
Yeah, me too, man. And I will just keep saying it over and over again. There's a co-host chair right here, man, if you have any interest in doing media, Joey Votto. Okay, you mentioned a couple things there. I wanted to dig in on a couple of them. So, okay, these will be rapid fire, though. You mentioned 920 career OPS. In digging around, just like looking at his baseball reference page and stuff like that, another great Votto stat I came on. In high leverage situations for his career, an OPS of 1,000. So the guy took it up a notch. In addition to hitting 77 high-leverage home runs, though, he also just stole bases way more often in high-leverage situations. Like, his stolen base per stolen base opportunities in leverage spots went through the roof. He's just like, I could do it, but I'm not doing it unless it matters. He also hit how many walk-off home runs? I mentioned 77 high-leverage home runs. How many of them were walk-offs?
Oh, my goodness.
It's a small number. But
six?
Five. Good guess.
Five.
Okay, he hit those 356 home runs off of 277 different pitchers. Name all 277. Who did he hit the most off of?
Oh, someone in the NL Central. Let's think about this. Someone on the Cubs, maybe. Let's go with Kyle Hendricks.
He hit six off of Kyle Hendricks and five off Adam Wainwright, who is, I would have guessed you would guess Adam Wainwright, just given how long they existed in the same division. Last one for you. He hit four against the Blue Jays, all of them coming at Rogers Center, spanning a couple different eras.
Nice.
Can you name who he hit them off of? I think you could. I don't know. I don't know if you get these are deep pulls. Some of them also, it's just random.
Different eras. Okay.
So there was one in 2022. He hit off a Jays reliever. His last appearance at Rogers Center here.
Oh my goodness. 2022. Oh, man. Who's a right-handed reliever that the Jays had in 2022? I don't know. I'll say Jordan Romano.
Jimmy Garcia. He hit one in 2009 when I think it was the first, like, I don't know, like early interleague era off of a guy. I don't know. I remember him being there, but I could not tell you anything about him. So I don't know. Just guess a random guy. I have no way to how to hint this player.
All right, 2009. So Roy Halladay was gone, I want to say. I don't know. Jesse Litch.
Sean Kemp.
Okay. Yeah. High Sox, Sean Kemp.
There you go. And then in 2017, he hit two in the same series. One off a pitcher who looks like our friend Jacob Kramer, and one off of another pitcher who I don't even know how to give you a hint on.
2017, forgettable year for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Who looks like Kramer? Let's think about this. Bearded, bald.
Come on. Multi-time Blue Jay.
I'm drawing a blank here, man. J-Hap, of course. Yeah, you're right. You know what? I wasn't thinking a left-hander would have served it up. That's why. Yeah.
The other one was a righty. I don't know how to give you a hint. It was Mike Bolsinger. I would not
have guessed that.
No, I don't know what to give you there. But yeah, Joey Votto, four home runs in his small windows of opportunity.
Still,
in Rogers
I would
Center.
Say, well, and I would add to that, perhaps one of his most memorable home runs, perhaps his most memorable home run at Rogers Center
World
came
Baseball
in the
Classic.
World Baseball Classic against, in that unforgettable game, Canada versus U.S. I was at that game. Joey Votto hit one of the biggest home runs I've ever seen. And then Adam Dunn proceeded to hit an even bigger home run for Team U.S. That was a banger of a game. I'll never forget. I was there with my old man and a buddy of mine, and it was good times, and we were very, very grateful to have Joey Votto representing our country.
Yeah, I was at that one too, which is it was a blast. It was it's an all-timer game. If they had won, if you pull that out, it's everyone's favorite memory. Jonah, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning, buddy. I will. Are you at the park tomorrow?
I won't be there. I got my own game tomorrow, man.
Ah, playoffs yet?
No, 2 weeks from now we start the playoffs.
Okay, well, best of luck. I hope you make it. I hope you get that first career dinger.
Appreciate it, buddy. Good seeing you.
Jonah Bierenbaum of The Score. Shout out to Jonah and our pal Justin Boone, by the way. If you are a fantasy football player, Justin Boone over at The Score, an invaluable resource this time of year. Okay, let's go down to Buffalo. Well, they're on the road, but we'll go down to the Buffalo Bisons team, where Josh Kusevich is red hot. He's hitting like 350 over the last couple of weeks. He has hit very well generally since getting the pretty aggressive promotion to AAA a couple weeks back. He's hitting 327 with a 373 OBP over 15 games with that Bisons team. He is going to join us next. We'll probably sneak in a Votto question as well. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues on Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. That is, or was last year, I don't know if it still is, the walk-up music of Josh Kusevich of the Buffalo Bisons, who's going to join us in a minute here. Bisons win 7-0 last night. I mentioned earlier, Jake Bloss pitched again. He went three shutout innings. Did allow five base runners, but struck three out, got up to 65 pitches. Jays being mindful of his workload the rest of the way here. He threw 50 pitches in his first outing, 56 in a subsequent outing, and now 65. Certainly seems like we'll see him at some point down the stretch here, but he is not obviously on turn for Monday unless, you know, hey, they look at it and say he only threw 65 pitches. We can get him around here. The Jays will get a 27th man for Monday's game because it's a doubleheader. We'll see what they do there. We know part of the reason they juggled the rotation was to give them a little coverage on that one. Jose Barrios will pitch one part of the doubleheader, could be headed for a bullpen day kind of thing. As well, the bullpen day worked out pretty well yesterday. Ryan Yarbrough, five scoreless innings. I know we kind of zoomed through the game yesterday. We focused on the Ernie Clement home run, which was ridiculous. But yeah, shout out to Ryan Yarbrough. Five scoreless innings as a bulk bullpen guy. Pretty good stuff. Also pretty good stuff, our next guest and how he's hitting down at AAA. Josh Kusevich of the Buffalo Bisons joins us now. Josh, good morning, man. Thank you for doing this. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good, man. Played you in with Lights Come On by Jason Aldean. Is that still your walk-up song or am I outdated on that?
No, that is still the walk-up song. Been the walk-up song since high school.
Nice. Very nice. Are you mostly a country guy, or you just found one song that works for you and you just roll with that?
Man, when I'm just listening to music, I like country, but I think that one's just, that just works for me now when I'm walking out.
Nice. And hey, if it's working, don't change it up, right?
There you go.
All right. So working for you guys last night, obviously you have a pretty big win last night, 7-0. How are things going down there with the team in general right now?
They're going awesome. It's a great vibe coming into the clubhouse every day. The guys all love to work hard, and everybody gets their stuff done, which is a really cool environment to be a part of. A lot of older guys, a lot of veteran guys that have been around the game. So it's great to learn from, and it's fun to win always.
So one of those guys who was a veteran guy and around, and I'd imagine pretty good to pick the brain of, Joey Votto. You know, look, we've been talking a lot of Joey Votto this week because he hung him up and stuff. What was that experience like for you getting to play with him for a little bit there?
Unbelievable. I mean, that guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I grew up watching him play, and just to share a locker room with him was pretty crazy. His knowledge for the game is just unbelievable. Like, he knows things that you couldn't even comprehend. Even after playing pretty much my whole life, he's talking about things in the game that I've never heard. So his knowledge for the game is awesome. Being able to pick his brain, kind of watch him go about his process, even at his age now, dude's still an absolute grinder. He's in the cage. He's working on his swing, being a perfectionist. So just being able to be around him was very special.
Well, I'm glad you got to do that, man. Glad we got to hear a lot about it in his, you know, his attempt to come back, and got to talk to him this week and everything like that. Elsewhere on that team, I'm going to ask, I know you're not in there facing him, but you've got to see Jake Bloss a couple times now. The results look pretty good. When I fire up the MILB TV, it looks pretty good. What have you seen from him? He looked pretty good to you too?
Yeah, he's electric. He mixes pitches well. He's a competitor, and he works with a great tempo. Keeps hitters off balance. They never know what to expect, and he's got some really good stuff coming out of his hand.
So let's talk about you and your season. Now, you know, I could ask you about Votto stories all day, but maybe I'll do that off air. So you get the bump to AAA a couple weeks ago. What was that conversation like? What has that transition been like?
Yeah, it was definitely exciting. We were out on the road in We were somewhere. We were far away, and we were playing a doubleheader. Played the first game, was supposed to play the second game, got taken out, told it was my workload was too high. And then after the second game, they told me that I was going up, which was cool. Then it was a crazy night, kind of packing at 5 a.m. when we got back and then getting on a plane. But then coming here, it's been awesome. Super exciting. Coaches have been very welcoming, and same with all the teammates.
In terms of, you know, obviously the life transition, where you're living, packing your bags and things like that, that part of it is going to take some time to smooth out. But you hit the ground running at the plate pretty well. How difficult is it, or how simple has it been for you to just kind of, hey, between the lines, it's the same thing?
Yeah, that's been definitely a part of my baseball career and kind of maturing. It's still the same game. It's still baseball. So they still got to throw that ball over the strike zone. You got to hit it. So just trying to keep it as simple as I can, really. And that's been a big help, kind of switching levels.
You mentioned, you know, they got to throw it over the strike zone. The first thing anyone says about you is how, you know, smart or polished the approach at the plate is. You know, we can look at the numbers. There's not a lot of chase there. You do make them come in the strike zone. What goes into that for you? Like, how have you been able to develop that as one of your core skills?
Yeah, I think that came from college. I had some coaches that really harped on that and kind of made me into the hitter that I am now. And so just it's full dedication to that, full conviction into that approach. And that leads it, like, obviously it's going to waver sometimes, but if you can just keep it as simple as you can, clear, concise, and have a plan going in, and then just know I have to execute. So yeah, that part of my game came from college, and I try to carry that in as much as I can.
Did you happen to see Ernie Clement's home run last night from the Blue Jays game?
Unbelievable. So sick.
you probably wouldn't expand the zone out there, right?
I mean, you don't want to, but every once in a while, your eyes get a little bit bigger than your mind.
Ernie is a guy who, you know, he does expand the zone a little bit more than you, but, you know, somewhat similar profile in that really high bat to ball rate. You know, going to strike out very infrequently. And then you look at, you know, where Ernie was in the minors and some of the strengths and weaknesses and stuff like that. Do you look at a guy like that and maybe you can take something from the success he's had the last couple of years here?
Of course. And it's definitely encouraging to see a player like that have great success in the majors. I mean, he's an awesome guy. I got to back up a couple spring training games and he was there and he was just so welcoming. And he's like, just talked about his kind of process, and man, he's unbelievably talented. So seeing a player like that have success is always awesome.
Are there other player types around baseball that you look at and try to pull from, hey, this guy is, you know, somewhat similar to me and has had some success, or you just kind of focused on you?
I think earlier in my career, I would have done that, like if I was in college, but now I'm very comfortable in the player that I am. So I'm happy being Josh on the baseball field.
Yeah. It's going pretty well, right? It's again, like the walk-up music, if it's working, don't change it that much. So at the plate, there's obviously the, you know, part of being as selective as you are and jumping on making the swing decisions you make. Part of that is, you know, recognizing pitch, where it's going to go, what kind of pitch it is and things like that. There's also an element of that, though, and you have the bat, the ball skill to pull this off. You're very, very aggressive in the zone. Again, is that kind of what you were saying? Is like you just have to have conviction in it? Like it's always struck me as an interesting skill set where you can be very selective on what's outside of the zone, but also be a really aggressive hitter.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a strength, but at times it can be a weakness if you're getting too aggressive, and that's kind of when struggles come in. If you're being aggressive at the right pitches, that's awesome. But if you're swinging at fringe pitches or what they want you to swing at, that can kind of get you into trouble. So when I'm going good, I'm staying in the heart of the zone, kind of what I'm looking for based on what he's got, whether that's in or out. But when I'm going bad, I'm kind of just free swinging throughout the zone, which can definitely be hindering.
I mean, it's again, working well for you so far from a batting average standpoint, for sure. When you talk with the Jays and they talk, you know, developmentally for you, and obviously we haven't got to the end of the season yet where they're helping you with an off-season plan, but where is the, you know, the next step for you? Where is the next level of growth? Is it just getting used to AAA pitching? Is it unlocking a little bit more power in the swing there? What's kind of the next thing you're focused on?
Yeah, I think it's just continuing to to increase my hard hit rate. Power's going to come with launch angle and swing and all that stuff. And that's cool to talk about, but I think hard hit rate is like hitting balls hard is always going to be good. And that'll come at the right launch angle too. So, also there's learning when you can take those chances. It's cool to hear Horwitz talk about his kind of swing changes and how he's learned in the bigs that he can take those chances on hitters counts when the situation's right. So, I think in my mind, that's what my offseason goal is going to be, is learning when to take that swing, take those chances, but still not giving up hard hit balls, contact, all that good stuff.
How much of that do you think is going to be just continuing to learn on the figuring out what pitchers are trying to do to you side? Like, I know with Horwitz, part of it is probably also when you get to the major league level, like at least from the data we can look at, like there's no such thing really as like, hey, a fastball count anymore. So many pitchers will just try to get a curveball over in for a strike in what was traditionally a fastball situation or whatever. How much of that do you think is just continuing to learn pitchers and being able to anticipate what they're going to try to do to you?
Oh, a whole bunch. And it's learning kind of just getting comfortable with the stuff that they're throwing. I mean, stuff is different now than it was a couple years ago. So the more at-bats you get, obviously, that's going to help out and with development and all that good stuff. So, yeah, the more at-bats you get and the more you're able to see what they're trying to do to you, the more you're able to kind of recognize that and then get on the offense and capitalize with your swing.
On the defensive side, you've been primarily playing shortstop. I know you've played some third and second as well. You pretty comfortable with how things have been coming along at shortstop?
Oh, yeah. Kind of since my sophomore year at college, I've been over there, and that's one of my favorite parts of the game is just helping out the pitchers and getting outs any way you can. So I feel really good over there. I feel good at third, feel good at second, wherever they need me.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about a teammate who got the call to AAA a couple weeks before you did. Alan Roden, you know, somewhat similar. You know, I had him on the show, and he said some similar things to you about, you know, the swing decisions and selective aggression and stuff like that. What are you seeing from a multi-time teammate now? He is he's in the ball real well.
Yeah, he's a monster. He understands the swing so well. He makes great decisions. He's a good athlete. He's fast. He can run. He's plays great outfit. I can't say enough good things about his game. He's a lot of fun to watch.
That's great. Okay, Josh, I wanted to get outside of baseball just a tiny bit here, because there is like, there's nothing about you outside of baseball online. Like what is, can you tell us a little bit about yourself or what you're interested in when, you know, you got to shut off and you got to unwind after a day of baseball or whatever?
Dude, if I got a day off and I'm going to unwind, I pretty much just chill, and then make some good food. You know, I love to cook, hang out with my fiance, all that good stuff.
Nice. So it's pretty much baseball for you then.
I love baseball.
That's great, man. Have you gotten up here yet, by the way, to Toronto?
I've never been up to Toronto, no.
All right. Well, we got to get you up here at some point. Before, I saw a couple of the Bisons guys were here, what, Monday, I think, came up for the game.
Lantigo was here. I think it's like 2 hours away.
Yeah.
So they like to just drive up there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not too bad. I'm coming. I've got Buffalo in a couple weeks for a Bills game. So I got doing the opposite. It's not that bad a drive. You guys should make it. Josh, man, thanks so much for doing this. Best of luck with the, and continued success with what you're doing at AAA right now. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me.
Appreciate it, man. Josh Kasevich of the Buffalo Bisons. Him and Alan Roden, a nice pair of New Hampshire Fisher Cats to Buffalo Bisons call-ups who have just been raking at that level. Now you mix in Jake Bloss, giving them some good shorter starts here as well. It's a fun team to watch. The season, you know, has gone for them about how you'd expect, given that half their opening day roster is now on the Toronto Blue Jays, and they've worked a lot of new guys in, and it's not been, you know, the smoothest for everyone. Jonathan Class A has struggled a little bit since coming over to the organization, but yeah, there's a lot of fun going on there. I mentioned Rafael Lantigua was here on Monday. I'm pretty sure I saw him at the game. Damiano Pomagiani has had, you know, a season where he's showing some pop. Will Robertson continuing to show the pop. It's a fun team. And yeah, it's not that, you know, I was asking Josh about coming here, but it's not that bad a drive for us going there as well. And they've got a little bit of home schedule left still here. What are they? They're home. Yeah, they're home this weekend against Omaha. And then, you know, in the new era, AAA season runs almost to the end of September. So you've got a couple opportunities there. I wonder if I could squeeze a game in when I'm there for Monday Night Football. I know they don't play on Monday, but maybe I could Maybe I can figure it out. Monday Night Football when the Jags are there and I'm heading down. Anyway, nobody cares about this. We're going to take a break. On the other side, we might talk a little bit of football, though. Ben Shulman is a big fantasy football guy. And the Oakland A's did something to determine their team draft order the other day that I really got a kick out of. Now I'm going to go down to the game tonight or tomorrow and ask the Blue Jays what they're doing for theirs or how they did theirs. But we'll go to the broadcast side. We'll talk to Ben Shulman and Matt Baskirgin on the other side. All of that is next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Blake Murphy. Jays continue their series against the Los Angeles Angels tonight. Luckily, we know the starters ahead of time today, so we can actually talk about the game and break them down. Unlike yesterday, where it was a big old TBD against TBD, and then we found out at the buzzer that Ryan Burr was going to lead a bullpen day. It was Bobrisky on the other side. Jays win 5-3. That series continues tonight with actual starting pitchers, Chris Bassitt against Jack Kahanowitz. Ben Shulman will be on the call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He joins us now. Ben, how we doing, man? Good morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Do we have Ben? Sorry. Okay. I don't think we have Ben Shulman after all, or we might need to reconnect or something there. Okay. Another thing from the game last night, while we confirmed that Ben is there, is the Trailer Park Boys were there, and a bunch of the broadcast crew got to meet them. So that's pretty cool. I wonder if Ben did. Ben Shulman, do we have you now?
Oh, hey, hello.
Hey, man.
Just getting through, making sure that we're on with you. But all good. Thanks so much for having me. And very jealous to not meet Julian and Ricky yesterday.
You didn't get to meet them. You weren't at Fine Diet, Sports at Grill. You know, great. You never know who you're going to run into. Great eats, et cetera, et cetera. Pay the bills here. Let's go. Man, that is pretty cool, though. Was your dad fired up? Everyone was fired up. Chris Black was fired up. Joe Siddle was fired up. But did you get, the inside scoop? Like, hey, guess who's here?
I did get the text and the picture of all of them together. I don't want to, totally expose my dad, but I'm not sure he's ever actually watched Trailer Park Boys. So I think potentially, I was kind of angry at him. I was like, it might have been wasted on you a little bit. He obviously knows who they are, and me and my oldest brother are big fans. But he was pretty excited about it, and he shot over the picture pretty quick.
Nice. That's what do we next time you're on TV? We got to try to get you to the Phillies series next year. Maybe we get an Always Sunny pick that's got to be the thing that would top Trailer Park Boys for you, right?
Yeah, if I got a picture with any of Mac, Dennis, D, Charlie, Frank, the waitress, I mean, we can even get pretty, Cricket. We can get Cricket might be the best one, to be honest.
But in full Cricket gear. Like, you can't just get Matty Mara looking Cricket.
Yeah, no, I need open wounds and, some sores on him and stuff like that. But anyone from It's Always Sunny would be about at the top of the list for me, but Trailer Park Boys comes in pretty close.
Pretty good. Also pretty good. Ernie Clement's home run last night, man. And then he says after the game, I probably shouldn't be swinging at that. I know you're on the radio call, so you don't get quite the benefit of the TV replays and stuff like that. Do you go back and watch it afterward and look at some of the player and bench reactions and things like that? Or were you able to pick that up from the radio booth?
I could see some of it from the radio booth. We get to see delayed a couple of the replays that they're going to show on TV in general. And I mean, just a ludicrous pitch to swing at. It looked kind of like the softball swing off the bat. You could tell that it was a high one. And it's not the first time he's done that this year. I mean, maybe to that extent, it's relatively new. But he hit one up near his neck out of the park, I want to say in May or something like that. And I remember talking to him then and him saying, yeah, that's a bad swing decision at the end of the day. No one is going to give me props in the dugout, but they're not going to tell me not to do that. And I'm guessing that he'll tell me a similar thing today. But it is pretty crazy. You don't want him swinging at that pitch, but the fact that Clement has such good contact skills that he can square up a pitch literally at his eyes and hit it out of the yard. I mean, on a night where Kevin Pillar is in the building and he hit one up in that kind of stratosphere in the playoffs way back when, it's pretty fun to see something like that.
Yeah, and as Chris Black pointed out on Twitter in a good thread on Ernie Clement's home run, the San Diego was, I think, the other one. He also has right. The one down below the zone against San Francisco, which I think is like the only below the zone pitch that Logan Webb has allowed hit out on the season. So he's got that plate pretty well covered top to bottom there. This is a little inside baseball, but like, I'm curious. So when you're doing the radio call, and I've done some of them with you, but a big play like that happens, and like a big play for the game, but also like a little bit of a humorous play. How do you balance, hey, we got to keep calling the action that's happening here because the radio audience can't see, but like on TV, you'd be going replay, replay, replay. You play that a bunch. How do you balance that talking about the big moment, but still, you know, keeping an eye on what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, you call the play. You know, you make sure that people understand that he's hit a ball out. What's the score now? What's the situation? But then you almost replay through words after that. You know, as I forget who hit after Clement yesterday. I think it was Joey Loperfido. As Joey Loperfido or whoever was hitting next.
Yeah, his triple came right next.
Right. So you didn't have that much time to talk about it. But in theory, first pitch gets delivered. You know, you introduce Loperfido, first pitch gets delivered. And then you go, well, Chris, to go back to that one, you know, how would you feel as a pitcher if you threw a pitch at a guy's head and he hit it out? And then you kind of can get into it, I think, as the game goes on. You know, obviously, we don't have the benefit of replay. But what I'm going to try to do there is describe as best I can the play using my words and trying to give you the insight that you wouldn't have been able to have because you're driving in the car or you're doing whatever you're doing that has you listening to us on the radio. So you can do a little bit of it, obviously not as much. And you know, I saw more of the reaction of the guys on the field and like on deck and stuff like that than deep in the dugout. I'm not going to see that. If you're on the top step, I have a pretty good look at you from up where we are in the booth. But if you're deep in the dugout, I won't see you. So I'm working with some different parameters, but just trying to give that information in the aftermath. Although when Loperfido triples and then, you know, they keep stringing hits together, that does make it a little bit more difficult.
What was Chris's answer to that? Because I would imagine most pitches Leroux threw were out there by the end.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly. I want to say that maybe no one's ever even swung at a pitch that he's thrown up that high. I mean, that's
because you shouldn't.
That's a bad miss.
Yeah,
like, that's a non-competitive fastball.
John Axford texted me about it, saying the same kind of thing. Is like you would just like not expect someone to, if you miss that badly, you don't even expect someone to put a swing on it.
I think if you see the guy start to swing, you're probably happy.
Yeah,
like that's on 0-2, still too high up to throw a fastball, really. You'd rather that, like, at least neck level or letters, probably more likely. That's just way up there. And that's just Ernie Clement doing something that really almost no one else in baseball can do.
No, and nobody else has other than Kyle Higashioka against the 35-mile-an-hour Travis Shinkey, I think, was the position player who was pitching at the time. Okay, so with Ernie in general, pretty good stretch of baseball here. Obviously, he's homered 3 games in a row, but that season batting line is now up above league average. What have you made of his season and really, you know, the last 3 years going from a guy who was cut twice and kind of signed as a not all that notable spring training addition for a Blue Jays team to a guy who now looks like he's probably in the driver's seat for at least a bench role in 2025.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, incredible for Ernie and a big help for the Blue Jays overall. You know, they obviously want more stars out of their system, but turning, you know, and Ernie, like you said, was signed. So it wasn't like he was really developed in their system, but to get someone out of the minors to be a functional, you know, member of the major league team is a big win. And for Ernie, it's huge. I mean, he has really taken advantage of the opportunity. I think that, you know, he said in the past that he changed his swing a lot when he got into the organization. And last year working with Matt Hague in Buffalo was a big help and continued some of that work in the offseason going into this year. And he's been a big help for them. You know, he has filled that role as the backup shortstop that Santiago Espinal would have filled in previous years. And Espinal's having a great year. He and Clement, you know, numbers-wise, are not that different, except in the number of salary, which is obviously an important thing when you're trying to construct a team. And Ernie Clement is providing them a lot of low-cost utility right now. I think he's still leading American League third baseman in defensive runs saved, which is kind of crazy, to be honest, even if he's not leading them to be in that mix, when Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was, for the most part, the everyday third baseman for this team for a while, and Ernie's kind of bounced around, is pretty crazy. And like you said, I mean, at a minimum, pencil Ernie Clement into the opening day roster next year as a kind of, you know, backup shortstop, utility piece, hitting against lefties. When you want a contact guy in the mix there, he's going to be on the team. And then you start, you know, if you want to get a little bit optimistic and think, you know, how he finishes this season could be important. He just reached 10 home runs. I mean, if Ernie Clement hits 13 home runs this year and gets the batting average up to 280, maybe you spend a little bit more money on the other positions you're trying to fill and think about Ernie Clement as your third baseman. I mean, if you have a lot of money to spend, but if you want to go, you know, guarantee something of a fifth starter when it's still a little bit up in the air, really put some money into the bullpen, or really put some money into Pete Alonso or someone else like that, that's going to cost a lot of what you're using for free agency this year, and you want low cost at third, I don't think it's the craziest thing to give Ernie Clement 100 games of third base next year.
Well, the Pete Alonso would maybe bump Vlad to that spot, and then you're having swinging from like the best defensive third baseman in the AL so far this year in Ernie Clement to look, Vlad playing there is fun. It would not be good over an entire season, I don't think. And you're right, I just checked the leaderboard. The top three third basemen in the American League by defensive runs saved right now are Ernie Clement, Oswaldo Cabrera, and still IKF in just 290 innings. Not a sharp defensive season for American League third baseman.
Can IKF win an American League Gold Glove while being, or just win the Gold Glove at third while being on the Pirates? I would love to know that. I mean, he probably was the best, but
the way I understand the rule is that it's you get nominated at the position you played the most innings at. So that is one component, and I would imagine the other component of that is then the position you played the most in the league, you played it the most. So even right now, like he is playing second base regularly. So he's crossed second base, like second base is his position now for Gold Glove.
Oh, he's played more innings at second now than at third?
Yeah. 360 to 290. So technically the way they do the Gold Glove stuff, yeah, he's a second baseman now. But who knows? Maybe he can still get in the mix. I don't know. Could a guy like I have joked that Dalton Varsho should win the American League Gold Glove in center and left field. IKF's just gonna walk up with like the AL and NL utility infield one. Okay, let's pivot off of Ernie Clement here. As fun as it is, yesterday the other part of this story is that the Jays do a bullpen day and go eight innings without allowing a run before Tommy Nantz gives up three in the ninth there. Ryan Yarbrough giving them five shutout ball games. I know it's the Angels, but it's still like really saved you on a bullpen day ahead of a doubleheader day coming up. Given all the trouble he's caused the Blue Jays over the years, how far did that go to, you know, us forgiving Ryan Yarbrough?
I think it went a long way. You know, it was a huge outing, like you said. I think the Blue Jays really needed that. They had used their bullpen a fair bit, and their bullpen had not been great in recent days, you know, especially in that Cincinnati series. So to get a day where Yarbrough is going to take a lot of the load, and the Blue Jays offense provides early runs, so they had a cushion all day. You know, he allows the starters to get some rest. I think that it's been talked about a little bit now recently, like they have some pretty senior starters who have a lot of innings thrown, some of them haven't had great second halves. Some of them have, but some of them came on early and have slowed down a little bit. And to give that extra day, I think, to all those guys is pretty big. It allows the Blue Jays to use two of their regular starters on Monday in that kind of doubleheader against Boston, where they'll resume the suspended game and then play another game after that. So that's pretty big, I think. So overall, it's huge. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch Ryan Yarbrough pitch. I think Chris and I kind of found ourselves chuckling at times because that's just kind of the pitcher Ryan Yarbrough is, that he just pounds you inside with 84 until you can't take it anymore and you break your bat and ground out to second base or something like that. And it's a lot of fun to watch. So I enjoyed it a ton. It helped the Blue Jays out a lot. And, you know, it's kind of like when Kevin Kiermaier came over. I don't know if you can ever fully atone for all of the anguish that you caused being a productive player for the Rays on the other side, specifically against the Blue Jays, but it helps a little bit. It softens the blow when you throw five shutout innings and really have your performance of the year. I think that was for individually for Yarbrough, who's looking for a contract in the offseason. That's a pretty good performance if you want to convince some teams that you might be kind of a swingman starter again next year.
Yeah, and, you know, I think if he's going to be that, it's probably on a second division team. But this is a guy who a championship aspiration Dodgers team thought could play a long man role for them for like 67 innings this year. And the results were pretty good. Like, he's got a 3.69 ERA on the season. So I certainly think he's probably going to be on the radar for some teams with that. The other guys who pitched in this one, Ryan Burr, Brendan Little, Tommy Nance, they're all kind of guys that are like, you know, they're typical relievers at this point in the year on a non-winning club, where we got to look past the ERA a little bit probably because the samples are going to be so small. And you look at Brandon Little's ground ball rate or Tommy Nance's curveball. I know you've been a bit of a Ryan Burr guy, you know, prior to him having the stumbles that he had the last couple of weeks or so. Have you seen anything from those three guys, you know, to build on, or from anyone who's kind of getting an expanded opportunity in the bullpen here? Like, what are you looking for from those guys rest of the way?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with Burr, who, you know, he's getting some big chances. Like you said, it hasn't gone incredibly well over the last couple of outings. He was solid enough, you know, opening yesterday, threw a scoreless inning with a little bit of traffic, then gives up the leadoff single and comes out. You know, he's been a little bit scattered with command recently, and I think you could say the same for Little. Little went on this big run in the middle of the season, I think, where he was just getting everybody out that he was looking at. And the whole questions from the beginning of the year about his control had kind of faded away because it was easy to forget that in spring. And then the first time he came up for the Blue Jays, he was kind of all over the place in terms of his location of his pitches and a lot of walks. I think a little bit of that has returned, and probably some of it is just some natural regression to the mean where, you know, maybe he was just on one of the great roles of his career and really locked in. And I think that he's been hurt a little bit by some walks or just generally falling behind and leaving pitches over the plate. You know, for Burr, I think that he can rein it in and still be productive. I think sometimes lefties can give his mix a little bit of trouble when your fastball slider and your fastball isn't 98 and your slider's moving into them. It can be a little bit complicated there. You know, so I'll be interested to see what he does against lefties, but I think he's really fighting for a shot to be in that pen potentially next season, or at least be, you know, the first guy up from Buffalo if he weren't in that pen. For Little, I really think he's got a great shot to be in that bullpen next year. I think if you go into the season with your lefties as Yenesis Cabrera and Brendan Little, I think you're in a pretty good spot. I think that Little being your second lefty is a very comfortable spot to be in, and you can always make changes if it doesn't go well, but I like that. And then Nance is still the wild card. I thought he looked great yesterday until he didn't, really. Like, I was impressed with a lot of what he was doing. I think he got tired in that second inning a little bit. You know, like, he gets the double play ball off the bat of Kevin Pillar, but Chris had remarked, he kind of hung a breaking ball and Pillar got too far out in front of it and rolled over it. And that's why it was hit hard right to the third baseman Clement. And I think up near 30 pitches, it just kind of started to fade. And that's when the home run got hit. But the first inning, he strikes out the side top of the order for the Angels. And I'm really intrigued by that curveball. You know, is it too similar to the slider? I think that's a question we'll find out as we go forward. The velocity is the same pretty much, although the movement's a little different. But he's a guy that I think is interesting too. And clearly, you know, they're giving him extended run here. So they're at least interested in seeing what Nance can do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 33-year-old journeyman is not going to solve the issues for 2025 bullpen, but these things matter for, like you said, AAA depth. Who's the first guy called up if there's an injury? We know even the really good bullpens need like 13, 14 guys over the course of a season. This is maybe a little early for this, but given that Jake Bloss pitched yesterday and Paolo Espino is scheduled to start today, you figure the second game of the doubleheader is probably a similarly structured bullpen day, just with a 27th guy for extra length?
I think that they'll go Yariel and Berríos on okay. the two doubleheader days, okay. potentially. I could be wrong. John Schneider kind of said something like that, but it was a little bit, it wasn't exactly straightforward. But I am under the impression that that's what they'll do. And kind of like the Baltimore doubleheader, you maybe just use the 27th on a reliever that they could even pitch in both games. They used Isert, I think, in that one. I could be wrong. They fairly well shot down the idea of Bloss pitching in it. So that's not the case. So they could go back to Yarbrough for sure. And I also wonder if it's kind of a thing where they might see what their bullpen usage is like in game one and be ready for something in game two, because, you know, maybe you pitch Berríos in game one, and if he does really well, then you bullpen game day two. But if he gets knocked out after two innings, then like you tell Yariel to stay fresh or something like that.
So, which makes sense. And then if you use Berríos and Yariel on Monday, that bumps the need for a bullpen day to Tuesday, because they shift everyone back. Chris Bassett wouldn't be on turn until Wednesday. But then Tuesday lines up with Bloss or Espino on more regular rest.
Yeah. And I think they can get pretty creative, because they're in a really busy stretch right now. But if they can just kind of, you know, use everyone really, and it'll be tiring, but use everyone as much as they need to, they get 4 or 5 September off days. Like a weird number of off days for the end of the season, including I think a couple in the span of a week. So they're about to be very well rested coming up soon, with an extra pitcher that could very well be an extra starter in Bloss, you know, when the rosters expand. So they just kind of got to grind their way through this stretch and get some outs, and they'll figure it out.
Other than the doubleheader, they actually have a pretty good August and September schedule if you were a team that was fighting for the playoffs. Easy stretch of games in August and then a lot of off days in September. Shame it didn't work out that way. Okay, so it's fantasy football draft season. Also, I guess, first of all, the leagues that you play in, because you're Ben Shulman and the Jays schedule is what it is, do you get to pull a, like, no, absolutely not on this date? Like, are you the one dictating when the draft is based on the Blue Jays schedule?
Kind of, not totally for that reason. So okay. I'm in two leagues, not to get too granular, but I'm in two leagues. One of them, I'm the commissioner. So I very well set the draft time. And the good thing, 99% of holidays mean the Blue Jays are definitely playing when everyone else isn't. Labor Day is a perfect storm right now. So that will be, you know, a good draft day. The other league I'm in, where I'm not commissioner, the good thing is it's with a bunch of my friends from school. So a handful of them work in baseball and in other sports coverage, if not. So they have ridiculous, you know, schedules compared to, you know, the norm. They're working nights and weekends as opposed to regular weekdays. So they found a way. I've never done this before, but it's basically an untimed draft. Okay. There's no clock. So we're not all drafting at the same time in a way. I could sit on my pick for 24 hours if I want to. So one guy will go in, make his pick. I'll get a notification that I'm on the clock, kind of, and I can go in at any time. So we don't have to find an hour or two, because they suggested about 7 dates. And I just said, I'm calling games during all of these. You guys can do it. And I'll set up an auto draft, or I'll give my friend my account and he'll pick the team for me. I'll figure something out. But they decided, because a couple people were in conflict, to do that. So that's how we navigated. And I'm sure I'll screw my draft up really bad.
Anyway, yeah,
so.
I'm fascinated. I'm going to ask this weekend as well around the games what the Jays are doing for theirs. And we saw the Oakland A's. Did you see that, how they determined their draft order?
Oh.
So they all stood up in the concourse and did a closest to pin. They all chucked baseballs from up top, and there was like a pin set up, and closest to got first pick. Or I guess you could probably pick wherever you want. But yeah, first pick was determined by a long toss closest to pin. That was a good way to do it.
Feels like a game Ross Stripling might be pretty good at, to be honest.
I don't know who won, actually. I don't know who got the best pick, the top pick there. Last one before I let you go here. Are you a video game guy? Did you ever play the MLB The Show games?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I unfortunately still play the MLB The Show game sometimes.
You don't have to say unfortunately, and there's no judgment here on video game playing.
I'm still playing. Yeah. I'm still playing the show. Matt Vaskirjan in the building.
That's why I ask. He's on the show next.
Really?
Yeah, to me, like MVP Baseball 2005 is like the GOAT sports video game for me, so that wasn't Vaskirjan. But then like the 06 to 09 era where I was still playing video games and buying the game every year and stuff like that, like Vaskirjan is the voice of baseball video games to me.
Yeah, I mean he is like absolutely the voice of baseball video games to me. I was a bit of a backyard baseball player, okay, to be honest. Me and Bobby Witt Jr. playing with Pablo Sanchez, the greatest to ever do it. But, you know, it is pretty – it's, like, almost weird because I've heard Matt Vaskirjan call as many games in a way as anyone because you just hear him so often on the games. So I didn't get a chance to meet him yesterday, actually. It was a bit of a hectic day, but I'm gonna make sure to today and probably not mention – MLB The Show because he's such an accomplished actual broadcaster.
Yeah.
I don't want to poo-poo that in any way, but it is pretty legendary to be the voice of the most popular baseball video game.
Yeah, he was also the voice of the XFL. I am gonna bug him about that one. I don't know. We'll see if I'm gonna talk to him about the show as well. You come on a radio show, you gotta expect it's gonna come up. Ben Schulman, thanks for taking the time out this morning, buddy.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
Ben Schulman, voice of the Blue Jays on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He and Chris LaRue will have the radio call for you all weekend. Back in action 7:07 tonight, Chris Bassett against Jack Kahanowitz. And then Bowden Fritz against Carson Fulmer tomorrow. Kevin Gausman against Tyler Anderson on Sunday. And then off to Boston for a rare 5-game series. We're going to take a break when we come back on the other side. It is that voice of MLB The Show for a long time. Also a studio host at MLB Network and play-by-play voice of the Angels. Matt Vaskirjan on the other side. As Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus, a little story of the year from the MLB The Show 06 soundtrack. We're going to talk to the voice of those games, Matt Vaskirjan, and the voice of the Angels, Matt Vaskirjan, in a little bit here. Before we get to Matt, though, first of all, you can text us 590-590. Standard data and message rates may apply. What's on your mind? Heading into the weekend series against the Angels and the old doubleheader against the Red Sox. Couple small notes while we wait for Matt. First, there was an advertisement during that commercial break for Dana White Contender Series, which obviously airs on Sportsnet. He did not get the win this week, but shout out to Pat Pitlick of Kitchener, Ontario. Nice to see some 519 presence there. Speaking of 519 and combat, and because Matt Vaskirjan has also done a lot of things outside of baseball, I will mention I got to call the Smash Wrestling show. I do play-by-play and color commentary for Smash Wrestling, a local independent wrestling company that works out of Toronto and London. And last Sunday was kind of their big event, like the season finale, the blow off there, WrestleMania, so to speak. That whole show will be up free on their YouTube channel on the weekend if you wanted to see it in 4K and see if I'm any good usually play-by-play color commentary for this one. That was a lot of fun. Again, you can text us 590-590. Standard data and message rates may apply. We'll sprinkle some of those in throughout this final segment here. We might not be getting Matt Vaskirjan after all, so fire away. We'll just mailbag it here for this segment if we can't connect with Matt Vaskirjan. There was one left over from Kevin in Toronto yesterday. Apologies for not getting to it yesterday, but I will get to it right now. Kevin, why are the Jays so slow to promote prospects? They hung on to Aspinall last year instead of giving Ernie a fair shot. They hung on to Biggio instead of giving Horwitz a fair shot, even though internally they clearly like those guys. Usually with these things, the answers come down to one of three things. The first thing I always look at with something like that is roster maintenance stuff. So the answer for Kevin Biggio is he was out of options and had cleared the amount of service time necessary to decline an option. So when you're looking at your entire organizational depth, maybe you think Horwitz will be better than Kevin Biggio right now, but what if there's an injury? What if you know, you trade pieces away or whatever, having both of them in your system is something the organization maybe deems more valuable than that upgrade of Biggio to Horwitz. So that's one possible explanation. That's usually something you see more with relievers and who gets the final spot coming out of spring training and things like that, but it's a consideration. The second one is, and this is usually what the team will tell you, it's that the guys need more developmental runway. They want to see them getting everyday reps at AAA versus being a bench piece in the majors. Now, in the case of Ernie Clement and Spencer Horwitz, Horwitz was 26, Clement was 27 last year. That explanation doesn't hold up quite as well as it does for, say, Aroldis Martinez. Addison Barger kind of somewhere in the middle as a 24-year-old. But certainly if a player's 21, you can make the argument, he might be able to contribute now. But, we want him getting more reps in the minors. So that's the other thing. The third one is inertia is a powerful force. Santiago Espinal is a guy you know has been on the roster for a couple years, knows the guys on the team, knows the coaches, knows the system. You know what he can and can't do. In sports, this isn't a Blue Jays-specific thing. This isn't a baseball-specific thing. It's everywhere. Inertia is a powerful force. What you do know and what you're already comfortable with goes a long way for some people and some decision makers. So those are the three things that I would look at when those things come up. Certainly, Ernie Clement has outperformed Santiago Espinal, although Espinal's having just a fine season with the Reds as well right now. And you know, that was one where Ernie won the spot in camp, and it probably also didn't hurt that the Jays could get out of a couple million on Santiago Espinal. That money became the Vogelbach money or potentially the Joey Votto money. So that's a real factor there. And then, yeah, Kevin Biggio, is he still without a team? Has he signed anywhere? I believe he is still just chilling out there. Yeah, he was released and hasn't signed anywhere yet, which is an interesting one because, you know, I don't know if the Dodgers gave him the option to go to AAA, but, you know, staying in an organization that's done really well player development-wise, being on the roster for a potential call-up if there are injuries, et cetera. Although the Dodgers they added so many bench pieces like Biggio and Ahmed Rosario and Tommy Edman and things like that they have since cut Biggio, cut Ahmed Rosario. They DFA'd Jason Hayward yesterday. As their position players get back to health, there's been a churn with those end of bench guys. Tommy Edman, the only one who's really stuck around, and that's partially because he can play shortstop and center field at a pretty good level. Again, you can keep text us 590-590. Standard data and message rates may apply. Apologies that we're not getting to Matt Vasgersian, but it is what it is, and it's a Friday afternoon, so we can just do some mailbag stuff as well. We might get Matt Vasgersian still, apparently. Okay, so Dan from Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia, asked, how many home runs have the Jays hit since the return of the jacket? Asking for a friend. I don't know. Enough. The jacket came back pretty early in the year, though. Like, it's not it's fun. They're playing the Angels right now. They just played the Reds. I don't think it's jacket-related, certainly. Okay. Let's pivot. Let's talk about this Angels team with the voice of the Angels and studio host at MLB Network. It's Matt Vasgersian. Matt joins us now. Matt, good morning, man. How are you? Wow. How are you doing, man?
Hi, Blake. Doing okay, man. Love being up here. Love, it's a nice trip for those of us continent hogs in the States to come to Toronto.
And what a welcome you guys get yesterday with that Ernie Clement home run. Man, what'd you make of that one? What was the reaction to that on the Angels side of things?
You know, I'm actually watching the cut down of the game on Sportsnet right now, the Blue Jays 30-minute version of the game, which is such a good thing to do. Not only do I like Ernie Clement, Spencer Horwitz is the guy. I mean, the ball that Clement hit was, what, a foot up, elevated out of the strike zone, and he just Thomas hawked it right out of the ballpark. That's not, it's not where you see a home run pitch unless you're CJ Abrams. I think he hit the most elevated pitch for a homer this year in any big league city. They've got some pretty good little players, man. And if Will Wagner's real, which I think he is, and I love his dad, so I'm hoping he sticks as a star. The moves they made, I know that, you know, I don't think Blue Jays fans love seeing veterans shipped out of town. No fan base does because it feels like a punt when you do that. But it's a retool, and why not see more of Horwitz, Lo Profito, whomever else, the other young guys that have balanced out a really nice right-left in the lineup. I think they did the right thing by making those moves. And guys like Horwitz and Clement are pretty exciting to watch play.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's not where we wanted to be this year, but you can find some fun in it at this point in the season. And I've got to triple check this, but I believe the pitcher Ernie hit last night was slightly higher than CJ Abrams. So CJ Abrams is going he's going to have to reach out and get an even higher one tonight now if he wants that record back.
It's something to shoot for. I mean, that's interesting because CJ is a shorter dude. It probably, to the eyeball test, it looked more exaggerated because he's shorter in stature, I think. But that's fascinating. We might have to talk about that on our telecast tonight, because in the absence of a lot of positive stuff with the Halos, we might talk about that for about four innings tonight.
Yeah, it's and here's one other one for you then. The only pitch in the StatCast database that was higher and got hit for a home run, Kyle Higashioka did it, but it was a 35-mile-an-hour pitch from a position player. So Ernie might have the record, depending on how you feel about including position player pitching stats.
I'm all in on it because we had to, because a couple years ago, Joe Adell hit a homer against Whit Merrifield here at Rogers Center. So if you're going to count that one, you got to count all of them.
Okay, let's talk about some of these Angels guys. You mentioned, there are some bright spots for the Angels. Obviously not playing the best of baseball lately, but the most important thing, similar to the Blue Jays, is that some of their young guys are playing well. Joe Adell in particular seems like a guy, obviously all the tools in the world with Joe Adell, but it seems from outside like this is the most consistent he's been at the plate over, a month or a 2 month stretch. What are you seeing from Joe Adell as he continues kind of to figure things out here?
Yep. I mean, that is absolutely a true statement that this is as consistent as Joe's been probably since he's gotten to the Angels, and he's had various stints, various opportunities, but he's never really been given a chance to go get four at bats against righties, lefties, relievers, et cetera, until this year. And he's responded, and you got to give some credit to the Angels for removing his kind of exaggerated leg kick, replacing it with a kinder, gentler toe tap, and it's made a big difference. And he's not the only guy like that. That seems to be a trend going around in baseball right now, that a lot of the guys with big leg kicks, and we got another one in Zach Neto, he'll go to the kick occasionally, but it's not his standard go-to, everyday suit, if you will. Nick Castellanos of the Phillies comes to mind. He's replaced the kick with a tap, and it's all a timing mechanism. And if it keeps you on time, and major league pitching is so good these days, then it should work. And it has for Joe. He's been really good. Three hits yesterday, really the only offensive performer worth mentioning outside of the rookie Nico Cavetis, who hit the homer, first major league hit. Adell's been good. I mean, when you're kind of buried at the bottom of the division, and I think Jays fans can relate this year, you're looking for positive things to build on next year, and Adell is one of those things.
Okay, so this isn't a positive thing to build on for next year because he's old, and who knows if he'll be around. How much fun was the Johnny Cueto resurgence the other day, though, coming up, and he got the ovation from the Royals, but in addition, he also gave the Angels 6+.
Yeah, I wasn't on that series, but certainly was tuned in. I mean, it was vintage Johnny Cueto, not throwing very hard, varying his moves to the plate, holding the ball at different release times. It's all about deception with him. And so, 17 years later, he's still pretty good, apparently. Is it sustainable? Sure hope so, because he's fun to watch. I mean, we all relate to guys like that, right? I think that's part of the appeal of our game of baseball, that there can be a guy that looks like Alejandro Kirk and is really good, but he looks like your buddy that you suck beers with after the game, right? So that's part of the allure and appeal of a guy like Johnny Cueto. He doesn't throw super hard. He's not a StatCast darling. He's not one of those showcase-type pitchers that throws 104 miles an hour like Ben Joyce. But he's fun to watch. And I think it's interesting that, he and Joey Votto debuted with the Reds a year apart. And Joey, as we know, is done, and Johnny Cueto's still somehow out there getting it done.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And when Johnny Cueto made his major league debut, tonight's starter Jack Kochanowicz was 8 years old. So it's got to be at least a little amusing for Cueto in that clubhouse. What are we looking for from Kochanowicz tonight? Only his fifth major league start. Obviously, we can, you know, the production has been just okay. The sinker stands out, but what are we looking for from him here?
Well, he's primarily sinker curveball, and it's he's that rare guy whose pitch mix is very similar regardless of whether he's facing a right-hander or a left-hander. And I think if you're asking the question to the Angels, it's keep the sinker down, keep the curveball away from where you can where the Jays can do damage on it, nothing in the middle of the plate. And let's try for a long one tonight because, you know, with a young guy who's still, as you mentioned, a handful of major league starts into his career, you know, the results have been a little inconsistent. There's been some good. There's been some not as good. So if five or six innings could be in the cards, that'd be great. The way Griffin Cannon kind of saved the bullpen yesterday, the same way Ryan Yarbrough saved the Jays bullpen yesterday, they've got a fresh group down there. But they'd still like to see a longer stint from Kochanowicz tonight.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, the Cueto giving them 6+. I don't know. You could pencil that in every time. So they could, if they could get some length from the young guy there, certainly helpful. Matt, I wanted to ask you a little bit of stuff about your career. But before I do that, are you just like beyond tired of getting asked about MLB The Show? I can skip that part of it if you don't care to talk about
it
anymore.
No, not at all. That was, you know, I was lucky enough to do that game for 16 years and would have kept going had they not told me I had overstayed my welcome and I was too old to be on a video game, which sucked to hear. But that's the reality of pro sports, as they say. No, it was fun doing that. Like I enjoyed it, and it was neat to, you know, I'd go to a friend's house and I'd hear the kids in the basement and I'd hear my voice coming out of the game. Like that kind of makes you laugh and smile. So I dug it.
That's great. And yeah, I mean, I don't play the game. I'm 38. I don't play the games much anymore. Did you play them ever? Or just kind of like you'd hear from friends? And did you ever hear from players like, hey man, I hear you in the game kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes and yes to all that. When I played the game the most is when they had, I don't know if you remember the handheld version. Remember the PSP?
Yeah.
It was a small handheld device that had some traction for a little bit of time in the early 2000s, mid-2000s. And there was a time I was working for the Padres when everybody on the traveling party had a PSP and had the PSP version of The Show. And there was a Wi-Fi capability on this thing that where you could be on a bus or a plane with your teammates and somebody could be in the front of the bus playing against a guy in the back of the bus live. And back then that was so cool, that kind of technology. Right now we take it for granted. So there was a time when a lot of guys were playing it. I think players around the league played it, younger guys especially, but not everybody. A quick story. Do you remember Bobby Kelty?
Yeah.
He played for the A's and the Red Sox. Well, there was a glitch in the game one year. Every once in a while, they would write a line that was designed to trigger every, say, 50 or so uses. And in the case of Bobby Kelty, it was just a descriptive. And the line was, the red-headed Bobby Kelty, red hair. So this glitch was such that every time the user operated Bobby Kelty, whether it was a check swing, a base hit, a ground ball, it was the red-headed Bobby Kelty. So you'd hear constantly, I'd say, you know, 2-2 to the red-headed Bobby Kelty. Here's the swing, and it's in the air by the red-headed Bobby Kelty. Like, it became so bad that it was good. So I thought it'd be funny one day. I was working for the Brewers at the time, I believe. No, I was working for the Padres. I beg your pardon. I decided that he's on the field. His team, I think he was in Oakland at the time. They were playing the Padres. I'm going to go talk to Bobby Kelty and apologize for the glitch. I'm sure we'll have a laugh. He had no idea what I was talking about. No idea. And didn't care. So he clearly didn't play the game, wasn't amused by my story, and I moved on. That was that.
Man, that's I can't believe no one would have at least like told, like someone in that guy's life played MLB The Show around that era and heard it. That's briefly Blue Jays legend, Bobby Kelty, by the way. He played like 62 games here and then got flipped for Ted Lilly. That's front of mind because I did a bunch of trade deadline trivia because obviously the Jays weren't buyers. They were selling there. Okay, Matt. So in addition to MLB The Show, you've done Padres, Brewers, Angels, Olympics, NFL, poker, blackjack. When you look at all the career stuff you've done, is the XFL the like oddest or most strange experience you've had as a broadcaster?
It was at the time. If you'd asked me, you know, in the year 2000, when the thing was kind of the laughing stock, I would have said, you know, terrible choice, weird experience. Looking back on it, though, I think I learned a lot about myself and about the business from that. You really don't get any better unless you fail. And that's true in anything. I know guys in this business who've been, they've just been, you know, walking on rose petals their whole careers and they've never fallen down. And whether it's you making a mistake or being involved in a project that didn't work, you have to have that failure to not only appreciate when you succeed, but to get a little better. So looking back on it, it was great. What would I say is my weirdest broadcast experience now? I'll hit you with one that's probably not in my bio for obvious reasons, but I was the voice of the Rock, Paper, Scissors World Championship with Tom Arnold one year.
Wow.
And that's when you're a baseball broadcaster and you're bored out of your mind in the winter and somebody calls you who's a producer friend and says, hey, you want to do this thing? And you say, yeah, that sounds fun. I'll be there tomorrow. And you do it. And then you hope it goes away. I did a lot of those back in the day.
Man, rock, paper, scissors. I did not hear you on the call of the Rock, Paper, Scissors World Championship. I am sorry for that, Matt.
Yeah, I can't believe you missed that. It was huge, man. It was a huge story nationally. But that's how it goes.
Oh, man. Matt, great to talk to you. Excited to hopefully catch you at the ballpark for one of these this weekend. Thank you for taking the time out.
You got it, man. Good chatting with you.
Matt Vasgersian, play-by-play voice of the Angels, also at MLB Network. Let's take a couple texts before we close out today because I asked you for them, so let's bang them out quick. Cam from Victoria asked, why don't they use Varsho as a catcher? Where's catching numbers bad? His catching numbers were mostly fine. They weren't Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk level defensively. I imagine Varsho would have got better at it, though, given what he did. The reason they don't use him at catcher anymore, though, is he's just way too valuable as a defensive outfielder now. I thought at the time of the trade, you know, hey, as your third catcher, you know, a guy goes down, you need to plug someone in. There's a lot of value in that. But he's just kind of exceeded it because he's, like, by far the best defensive outfield option you have. So, I think the days of Dalton Varsho even being discussed as a catcher are probably behind us. Jeff from Oshawa said the emergence of Ernie Clement and Spencer Horwitz allowed the Jays to trade IKF and utilize his 2025 salary to other pressing needs. Yeah, totally. That's also, you know, again, IKF returned good value on that contract. He was a well-liked guy, played really, really well here. The reason you don't want to have to spend 2 years, $15 million on a guy like IKF is because that's a player type you hope you can develop internally, and the Jays are getting a little better at developing that type of guy, if not star guy. Someone didn't sign there said, nice shirt. Thank you. It is the Alexis on Fire Skydome Domer shirt from their show with Blink-182 the other week. C-Max in Edmonton said, thoughts on Tommy Nance? I really like him. Will he have a spot in the pen next year? I'm not going to give anyone a spot in the bullpen for next year just yet. Obviously, Tommy Nance, you know, anytime there's a guy like this, it's like, okay, well, why hasn't he stuck yet? Obviously, there's a gap somewhere. The curveball is very, very legitimate, though. And when you have one weapon you can build on, I brought this up a couple times. Brandon Little having the ground ball rate that he does. Tommy Nance having the curveball that he does. When it comes to these fringier relievers that you're trying to get a chance, give a chance at and see who can stick, give me one thing they do really, really well and try to build on that. And in Tommy Nance's case, the curveball is pretty legitimate. Last one before we go. Nick says, who's a guy you're looking forward to make his debut in September once rosters expand? His are Bloss, Danner, and De Los Santos. Yeah, you know, seeing Hagen Danner, given that he's fought his way back from injury now and is in the mix, would be cool to see. I should say Nathan Lucas's name just in case Dan Shulman's listening because I know Dan Shulman would probably want Nathan Lucas to get a look at some point. But yeah, Jake Bloss is the high man on that list, given how much they've claimed and added to the 40-man DFA'd relievers and things like that. I don't know if we're going to see a Connor Cook or a Mason Fluharty, who would have been my answer a couple weeks ago when there were a bunch of open spots on the 40-man. On the position player side, again, not on the 40-man, I think Alan Roden getting a test would be cool, but, you know, is it worth opening up a 40-man spot when he's still got a year before he needs to be Rule 5 protected and things like that? Might not be the best roster management, the best use of that. Matt in Halifax, just wondering if I think Vladdy will transition to full year third next year. I don't. There are ways the offseason could play out where he's going to play there a little bit more, but he's not a good third. It's fun, but like when he was a full-time third baseman there, and yes, he wasn't in, you know, he wasn't quite the athlete he is right now and wasn't as sharp overall. He would be better than 2019, I think. But I think that only happens if your offseason goes a very specific way. And that is that the only things that you can add to address to your team are first base DH types. So maybe he plays there a little bit, but I don't think too regularly. All right. Chris Bassitt on the mound tonight against Jack Kahanowitz. Should be a fun one. That's a 7:07 start. Dan, Joe, and Arden and Emily on the TV side for you. Jamie and Caleb on Blue Jay Central. I will join them tomorrow for that game of the series. Ben and Chris on the radio side. Thank you to Jonah Birnbaum, Josh Kasevich, Ben Schulman, and Matt Baskirjian for joining us. Thank you to Amit Mann, Austin Mackey, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Little programming note, I'm off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so Sho Ali and Nick Ashbourne will have the show for you then. I hope you enjoy those two guys for 3 days, and hope you all have a very wonderful weekend. I will talk to you Thursday at 10 a.m. Have a great weekend, everyone.